and welcome to another edition of This Thing On. I'm hosting today. My name is Joseph Michael Foster. Just in case you want to steal my identity, there's Alex. What's your middle name, Alex?
Alexander Michael Petrovich.
Alexander Michael Petrovich. We've got such basic names until your surname. Really off, isn't it? Jade is here producing. Hi, Jade.
Hi.
And we're joined by the fabulous Alistair Beckett King.
Alistair James Beckett King.
Alistair James Beckett King.
To do the full name.
That is lovely.
I feel like I could have been AJ Beckett King. I feel like maybe I could have been a historian or traveller.
You could have been.
My memoirs.
That's a good author
maybe.
Name as well.
Yeah, initials are great, aren't they?
Joseph M. Foster.
Ooh.
But that's
you
not...
look like you might have written something that in retrospect is racist.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was just a ripping yarn at the time.
Yeah.
But now the depiction of those villages.
I don't stand the test of time, generally. So that's, yeah, fair enough. And Alex has got the jazziest surname going. But we've spoken a lot about that, haven't we?
So Petrovic is Peterson, is it?
Yes, Peterson, exactly.
In
Serbian,
wow.
Yeah, yeah. Every surname in Serbia ends in Vich.
So it's all patronymic. And
yes.
Does it actually work like that? So
yes,
son
of.
It comes from the father's name, like in Iceland.
I don't know if it's every single generation. So, for example, my name is Alexander Michael Petrovich. My dad is Michael Alexander Petrovich, and my granddad was Alexander Michael Petrovich. So I don't actually know where the Peter.
So it's like the way Peterson now is. It's no longer patronymic. It's just a surname.
No.
But like in Iceland, they actually take
it's a different
their parents' names
as
their surname.
Did you know that?
You've never mentioned this.
What about
this
Icelandic
times.
Surnames?
No, I did not know that. I'm
so,
learning a
so
lot.
So in Iceland, there's something son or something daughter.
Yeah.
So you're someone's daughter or someone's son.
Yeah.
And
so
it's your parents' names.
Yeah, so for example, there's a footballer called Gylfi Sigurdsson. So his dad is Sigurd.
Right.
His son would be Gylfison.
I guess so, yeah.
Yeah.
And there's a list of names that you're allowed, and you can't just call your child Ribena, Starburst, and they'll say no because you can't be Starburst, son, because you've ruined an extra person's life, which is the child of your child.
See, that's
so they don't allow it.
That's similar here, but here it's all sort of Adolf, isn't it? You can't be called something.
Is that the law that you
people
can't be called Adolf?
Well, I'm
well,
sure.
If you are called Adolf when you arrive,
there is a
you have to change it.
I don't know how that works. We're already treading new ground. I'm thoroughly bamboozled by the start of this.
I can't believe you haven't researched the obvious issues that were going to arise based on us saying names.
But there was one thing I know that was bad. It was banned, but I can't remember what it is. Maybe we can find out and say later on in the episode banned names in the UK. But
I
they
think
do
you
ban
can't have
stuff.
Numbers. I think numbers.
Yeah.
Get
okay.
Banned.
Fair enough.
Like numerical characters, like Arabic numerals, rather than.
Oh,
I guess
right.
You could spell out a number, maybe. You
that's
could call
true.
A child 13.
Or Harper 7. Isn't that David Beckham's? Or is
yeah.
that
it's called Half Past 7.
Harper.
Oh, Harper. Sorry. I thought he said Half Past 7.
Half
in
past
a southern
seven.
Accent.
Quarter to 9, go to bed.
Terribly confusing.
I think there are certain, I think in Croatian as well, there's certain surnames that are, or certain names that are bad, but not even for any particular reason, because like, it doesn't fit with the. There's some reason behind it.
It's too complex.
Yeah,
for me.
Over my time,
having
head.
Done no research. But how are you, Alistair? Anyway,
I'm fine. Yes, I've got a lovely warm flat. I just came in out of the rain.
Wonderful.
Got a cup
Has
of
it
tea.
It's been fucking horrible, actually.
It was fine when I arrived, and very very calm and no rain. And I heard talk of a storm on the train, but it wasn't there. And then, what's the word for it? Storm. I've already said it. That's the reason I can't think of one. A sudden rainstorm just crashed down just before I came in.
Oh, that's great. That's brilliant. I love England.
So you've given me shelter.
We got soaked in all of about, a minute?
Yeah,
walking.
A minute. You know, I just passed my hair down. So I washed my hair because I've got a gig tonight and I thought I don't want it all to be frizzy because it got rained on. Got rained on again. I've been made a laughing stock.
Well, that's annoying. But your hair looks fabulous.
Thank
man.
You.
Thank you.
And you were doing
Thank
some Christmas shopping today.
I was attempting to Christmas shop, but I found it so disheartening and difficult because everything I want to give, I wanted to be like I don't know, something from a children's book like Narnia, you know, sort of like a magic key. You just can't get that sort of thing. Yeah, do you know what I mean? Like, oh, a strange book written in an unknown tongue. You can't get that.
So you were Christmas shopping here?
I was attempting to Christmas shop.
I'm sure you can.
Brighton's
surely you can get stuff like that here, isn't
it? Yeah, you can get like sort of mass-produced corporate hipster versions of that. With like Harry Potter on it.
Well, they're selling Nirvana t-shirts in H&M. I saw that the other day, which made me feel
it's what they would have wanted.
Yeah,
I say that as if they're all dead. Several of them still alive.
Apparently they've sold the control of it because everyone just blames Courtney Love for everything, but apparently they've sold the band have control. So what's going on, Dave? That's what we need to be asking.
You know what, I went on YouTube and I was listening to Hole, the Courtney Love band. And in retrospect, they're very good.
They are very good.
And everyone was wrong.
Yeah.
And I remember at the time, everyone was like, oh, you know, Kurt did all the work, or Billy Corgan wrote that one. And I don't know if any of that is true.
No.
But they're really good. Mm. And I feel like it's a little bit, there's more than a little bit of misogyny going on in there.
Well, they were a successful band in their own right at the time. Weren't they already successful before they met?
That may well be true. I don't know. I don't know the history of it. I was terrible with music when I was a kid. I was so scared of it, so I'm normally sort of...
What did you listen?
I didn't really listen to any music. I only listened to TV theme tunes. Because I didn't feel like any other kind of music really belonged to me. But TV theme tunes I listened to over and over again.
Your favourite TV theme tune?
When I was a kid, it was probably... I think I liked Tasmania quite a lot. Welcome to a world... Welcome to a land way over down under. The sky is always yellow in a rain, nor shine.
The raccoons?
I like the raccoons.
Run with us.
But that's just a pop song, and it isn't. There's no reason for it to be there at all. That's what's so delightful about the raccoons.
Because I was thinking,
and it's so inspiring.
It is inspiring.
So you're probably too young for the Cities of Gold. But that's another amazing theme tune, which I can't sing, but it's amazing. Absolute banger, which is a phrase I learned recently. and I'm using too much and possibly in the wrong context. I'm also using it slaps for music, which I don't even know if that's a phrase. I think I might have misread a tweet. I'm saying that song slaps.
That song slaps.
It really slaps.
Try and get that off of it. If it's not a phrase.
If it's not a phrase, let's get it started.
Patented.
Come on, you young folk. Start saying it.
Slang?
No. I used to say El Sapriziano a lot. And just never caught on.
So what is it used to express surprise?
It's
or is it to say there is the surprise?
It's sarcastic surprise.
Oh right, so when you're not surprised.
I'm not surprised, no. I also say good times, good rhymes. All of these are bad things.
things you don't want to patent.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Well, there's always people that claim that they came up with a certain phrase.
Yeah.
How would you justify, how would you back that up?
Well, so that's interesting because in Peep Show, Superhand says Kel fucking Surprise.
Mm.
And then my friend took the piss out of me for using it once for about 3 hours. And he was like, yeah, you're always like, El Surprise, yeah. And then I started saying that. So maybe it did, maybe that's theft. Should I be held up in the court of theft?
Well, because the court of theft. I'll phone them in the morning. They're open now. It's a specific court.
Isn't it just court?
No, sorry. I've made up a court specialised in theft. Thank you.
The law of the land says that as long as you can invent the court you want to be tried in, I have to try you in that court. That's just...
I demand a trial at the court of turning a blind eye.
Yep, it's in the, I want to say Magna Carta, but I was going to say carte blanche.
is it a bit on the Magna Carta where it's really smudged?
Yeah. It's in the inside of a cart door. It's in that, so they can't touch you. But there's a lot of phrases, though, that I don't think we realise how much of our language we owe to... Maybe it's not normal people, maybe it's just comedy nerds, but the amount that we owe to formative TV shows. Well, the way Friends has gifted the world with lots of phrases, the people talk about going commando as if that's a thing, rather than something that someone wrote in one episode one episode of a sitcom, and is now a phrase that people use. And just the number of Simpsons phrases that until social media existed, you didn't realise you weren't the only person to say things like, you better run egg on a weekly or daily basis. Unquotable quotes like, everything's coming up Milhouse, which you find out that loads of people use, which is so strange.
Ay caramba. I've never seen an Icarumba live, though. I've never seen someone use that.
Even Bart barely says Icarumba after the first series.
It's one of those ones where, like, and there's phrases in shows that become, they've become synonymous with that catchphrase, but then they were never, the phrase was never said in the episode. Like,
yes.
Beam me up, Scotty was never said.
Yes.
Ever. And wasn't, oh no, saying it, oh, that one I know is quite a famous
that,
one.
That was one. Meldrew, Victor Meldrew does say I don't believe it, but he says I do not believe it a lot more than he says I don't believe it.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
The catchphrase is I don't believe it,
yeah,
even
yeah.
though he says I do. He barely finishes it most of the time.
Yeah, yeah.
He just starts it because presumably, yeah. Well, I think it's really interesting because there's a lot of Mandela effect theory. Are you familiar with the Mandela effect?
Oh,
that
because it's absolute
actually, yeah.
bollocks. In that case, I'll turn over to you to explain this top level nonsense.
So this is how it's gonna be, is it? No, I've got. Yeah, I was lying.
Oh, right. So it is some real Reddit chicanery, right? So the Mandela effect comes from people. Some people think they remember that Nelson Mandela died in prison,
mm-hmm.
and then they flip over a newspaper and they say, "Here's Nelson Mandela not being dead in prison." And so rather than thinking I'm a massive idiot who could be so unaware of one of the 20th century's most important politicians that I thought he was dead, and with no sense of what the consequences of that would have been for South African politics, they think that they shifted into a different dimension.
Fair enough.
Without noticing it. That's that, so that it's more reason, rather than thinking I could have been wrong, they think the CERN, you know, where they've got the particle accelerator,
yeah.
it's shifted us into a different dimension where things that would be easily forgotten by an idiot are different. And other examples, there's a series of books in America called the Berenstain Bears, and people remember it being Berenstain, which is a more common spelling of Berenstain than Berenstain, but it isn't, it's Berenstain. Some people remember that Walker's crisps, they remember that the salt and vinegar are blue, but now they're green.
Yeah.
That's just because they're blue on every other brand of crisps. But again,
yeah.
these people are solid top grade, solid gold morons. And whatever it was we were talking about when
yeah.
I brought this up,
yeah.
which I can't remember now, is another example
it's
of
a
that.
Sort of like
you're just shattering my entire...
How?
Yes, there are there are stupid people on the internet. And they're allowed to use it as well.
And
I'm sorry to have broken this
There's
to
one
you.
Right here.
What's that? Father Christmas was originally green.
Well, I think
yeah.
that one's true. That he was often
no,
depicted as
oh,
being
was.
Green.
Dickhead.
Yeah, do your research. I think he was regularly depicted in a variety of colours. I think he was green, but I think the red Santa was part of Coca-Cola branding.
Oh,
I think
okay.
So they pushed a red Santa, and Coca-Cola being so ubiquitous, red Santa is now officially it's always red Santa.
There's a Coca-Cola bus driving around Brighton, and obviously because we're on the upper floors, scared the shit out of me the other day. Just didn't know it was going to happen.
Does it have the holidays are coming?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Music?
And but it's just because it was. I don't know what speed it was going, but and it's just like whoa. And then it's like
could
people
you,
play.
You don't want to hear it go past it like holidays are coming. Holidays are coming. Holidays. the Doppler effect makes it kind of sinister.
Yeah, exactly. It was really
holidays are coming.
I actually stopped what I was doing and. Burned an effigy of Father Christmas. but do you know, someone also said to me, and this is supposed to be like a life hack, that when I get a Christmas tree, when I'm getting rid of it, I should just throw it out the window rather than carrying it down the stairs. And I was like, I don't think you know. Like it's quite a
there's,
busy street.
There's life hacks and then there's just psychopathy.
Yeah. It's like, and I was like, well, why would you do that? And they were like, so you don't get needles in the communal hallway. And I was
it's
like, I don't give a fuck
it's
about
the bigger crime.
So
but
wow.
I did kill a man. But yeah. So have you got any Christmas gigs?
I always try to avoid doing too many gigs in December.
Yes,
I did. The only time I was ever booed off stage was at a Christmas gig, and it was one of those gigs where it was so bad I had to revise previous deaths up to bad gigs. Oh no, that's a death.
Yeah, yeah.
One man,
okay.
One really drunk man. The problem is when people are drunk and they heckle in a slurred way.
Yeah.
I can't use my wit to respond because I can't tell what they're saying, and I just become like a substitute teacher is losing control of the class, or in this case, never had control of the class. So a guy kept slurring something, and I had to get off stage to get him to say what it was that he was saying. And what he was saying was, "There's a taxi waiting for you outside," which in a way was flattering because he thought that I could afford a taxi. But in fact, I had a 30-minute walk and a train. But I had no sharp comeback to that. It wasn't great.
Whereabouts was that?
I'd rather not say.
You don't have to say the club. Can you say the town?
It was in London. It was.
Right.
London.
Okay.
And it wasn't great. There was a massive party in from a Christmas party in from Sainsbury's, and you know the way that I shop in Sainsbury's, but now I do it angrily. Because they were so awful.
Put things back on the wrong shelves.
I regularly do that.
Well, we were actually talking on the last episode. Yeah, that thing where they're so drunk, the words that they're saying don't make sense, or you can't use your words to combat it. Almost.
Yeah,
it's just
and there are people who do well in that environment and can handle it. But I've never heard anybody say that they enjoy that. I don't understand why it's because there's money in it. I don't understand why it's a service that people provide, comedy for people who are that drunk, because it can't be done. You can entertain them, but why would you entertain them?
Yeah.
So I kind of feel, obviously I'm at nowhere near the level I'll be doing corporate gigs, but that whole thing just sounds like a nightmare. Corporate gigs, where that's why they pay so much money for it. It's unplayable gigs in an environment where comedy's not going to work. It's basically an office conference hall.
I never get booked for corporate gigs, and I don't think of me as being a very weird act, but also I don't wear a suit, and I can't imagine me presenting prizes to the people in sales who did the best, and presumably other people also can't see me doing that. And never booked me for well-paid corporate gigs, and I just wanted to be clear that I'm happy to get a suit if need be. I do it. I wear a suit for a day. I can be polite and make a joke about HR. Come on.
What's the deal with blue sky thinking?
Well, I'd like to... there could be an untapped market there of watching people do corporate gigs because they're so horrible, but seeing them win or lose.
Just like as a reality TV show?
sort of magnifying the pain, which is why it's not helpful and no one would ever agree to it. But
a corporate comedy like documentary.
Yeah.
Because I feel like part of the reason they pay well is just it's like a sort of non-disclosure agreement in that people don't want it to be representative of...
Maybe you're
what
right.
They would do at a proper gig with a real audience.
I want to see the documentary.
Because in a weird way, I think an audience is normally in a good gig, an audience feels like one entity. Whereas if people have existing relationships in an audience that go beyond a couple of people, it feels like it has a weird effect on the dynamic.
Yeah.
So if everyone knows everyone else, that's a bit weird. If there's one massive family or one big work party, it's a different dynamic because people have different shared. That's just humour works differently in those ways, and people have shared things. And there's always, it's his birthday, make a joke about him, but it won't be entertaining for anybody else, except for you.
Yeah, sort of.
And I don't care.
And they, but sometimes as well, you do that and it's not entertaining for even them. And they're like, they're like, well, that wasn't what I wanted. It's like, well, I basically just did exactly what you told me to do. But I find interesting is there's always a decider in any group. Mm. There's one person who's the highest ranking that, you see them sort of looking at that person, and then if they're really enjoying it, then everyone gets into it.
Yes.
I find that interesting.
And often they're the heckler if there's going to be a
heckler. Yeah, exactly.
Because
they're
the one who's normally the funniest in that group. Which is interesting again. And there's a certain type of... I don't get that many heckles. I see other people get heckled more than me. And perhaps that's middle-class white guy syndrome, that things are just slightly easier for me on average weekend gig in a way that it's difficult for me to tell. Like, I'm just naturally finding this a little bit easier than these other people. But you do notice there's a certain type of man that buys a ticket to a comedy gig and then thinks, why aren't they listening to me?
Yeah.
And just feels slightly offended by somebody else being the funny one and feels the need to get involved.
Yeah.
which isn't always a bad thing, and there's probably a few of those, a small number of those guys who go on to finally write a joke and try and do it themselves.
Yeah.
And then hopefully realise what a wanker they were being.
Yeah.
When they tried to get involved from the audience.
Well, that I had one guy whose birthday it was at a gig the other day, and there was a Hindu in, and this guy whose birthday it was, and a Hindu were just really nice. Just really nice.
Two years ago in Edinburgh, I was doing my solo show, my debut show, and a massive stag do. Like half the room was a stag do. They booked months in advance. So like the first, as soon as the tickets went on sale, half Sunday, and I thought, what's happening on that day? And it turned out a stag do of idiots had for some reason all decided they were going to go to see my show, and they all came. In Breaking Bad, so they're all dressed as characters from Breaking Bad, like in costumes.
So just slightly more frightening than usual, then.
Yeah, and like, but you know, whatever it is, the yellow sort of hazmat suit. Or
yeah,
thing.
Yeah.
I haven't seen it. Whatever he wears, and they were just the best guys. They were they were super energetic before it started. And thought, this is going to be horrible because I greet people on the way in rather than being backstage, and then they were just proper good audience members, interactive in the interactive bits, laughing along when they weren't supposed to be involved. They were just great.
Yeah.
Like, I had to do a special separate shout out for them at the end. So instead of saying a round of applause, it's just these guys for being the best stag do in the whole of comedy history.
Yeah.
And it's horrible to. Well, sorry, it's nice to prejudge an audience and be wrong. It probably is horrible to prejudge an audience, but you do.
Yeah.
But it's so nice when you're wrong and they turn out to be great.
Yeah. And so the guy whose birthday it was. Was heckling throughout and sitting in the front row, and his mum then started heckling, which was intense. And I was emceeing, and then I was upstairs getting a drink, and obviously it was like quite a way into the second section. Yeah, no, it was the second section break, and he came up to me and went, "Yeah, I used to do stand up," and I was like, "Well, then why on earth are you fucking with me for the last hour and a half, you prick?"
I guess it's like when a policeman becomes a criminal.
Yeah.
He knows the tricks of the trade.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So like he can do all the proper.
I work
heckles.
For a charity. Yeah.
Just before he knows exactly when you're about to do a punchline, just to jump in with something completely unfunny and irrelevant,
yeah.
Or a question.
So what are you doing instead? So when do your gigs finish?
I've got gigs for the next couple of weeks.
I love the way I said, "What were you doing instead?" Christmas, Joe.
Yeah, just enjoying life. That's not accurate. Sitting in front of a computer, writing and animating. That makes it sound like I'm doing loads more work. Staring at Facebook is the reality.
Yeah.
The show I'm working on, which will be my second show, because I took a year off like a lazy hero.
Yeah.
I'm going to start it with. It's funny that you mentioned the raccoons, with an intro like an intro to a Saturday morning kids show from the 90s or 80s,
nice.
Using traditional animation techniques, so it looks properly like the real thing. Which means it's taken me an entire year so far to do most of it, and so it's going to be finished just about in time. Just one of the things I realised is, because those shows had massively expensive title sequences and then the shows themselves were really cheap, which is a very sensible approach if you're doing like 50 shows a series or whatever they did. It doesn't make any sense at all to do that for a stand-up show. It's really extremely inefficient, and I should have written some jokes. As it is, I'm going to have a 2-minute intro and then no jokes for 53 minutes.
Oh, I'm sure it'll be great.
Oh yeah, I'll probably write some between now and then. But it's going very well at the moment.
Time's on your side.
Yeah, I've got plenty of time.
Yeah, you've got loads of time.
Plenty of time to think of
some
jokes.
I was talking to Angela Barnes, and she said she was like, "Oh, well, I wrote my show in June," and I was like, "Yeah, well, I'm not capable of doing anything like that." Like, but
it is good to know what you can do. Though it's good to know yourself.
So basically, I did my first show last year,
and
then this year I'm going on holiday.
Yeah, very sensible. That's what I did. Yeah.
And then I'll go back next year, but I've been doing some new material, and I've started to bomb less.
Nice.
You know, you go through that stage at the beginning where you're like, dum, 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 dum.
Well, doing a second show has been interesting for me because it feels like writing a show for the first time, because I spent ages working up a first show.
Yeah.
So when I was previewing it, it was hard and I had horrible gigs, but at the same time I knew that 80% of what I was saying was pretty funny because, because I'd done it before and
yeah.
it all worked. So I knew that 80% of it would definitely go over well with a full room, and if I knew what, if I was doing it with confidence.
Yeah.
Whereas starting again, and I did a work in progress this year, so just 14 dates.
Oh, nice.
So doing a work in progress, knowing that all of this is either a bad joke or not a joke at all, was a weird but enjoyable experience. And actually, it made me realise I could have just done the show then. I could have just done a show.
Yeah.
Because I, if I had put my heart into it, I would have been able to write a show. And it wouldn't have been as good, definitely not in terms of quality of writing.
Yeah.
But... And like afterwards, people who came to the previous show, some people came and saw the work in progress and said, oh, we think it was better than last year. And I was saying, well, you're wrong, because I've tested all of the jokes in different contexts against one another and they aren't as good. But the trying to do... I think of it as the opposite of what Chris Rock allegedly does, where he just reads out new material to see if it's funny, because he's Chris Rock. So if he puts any effort into it, it's going to be hilarious.
Right.
So knowing that my material is terrible... I try and do it with as much energy and
try to make it
as much funny as possible.
Yeah.
And it meant that I had gigs which were better than some of the gigs I had the year before, some of the shows I had the year before, with definitely better material. And so maybe I was being funnier, or maybe the fact that it was a free fringe show and people hadn't paid anything meant that they were enjoying it more. That's probably a factor.
Or it was just fresh.
Or that it was, I was just enjoying it, because when the laughs came, I would go, oh, I wasn't expecting a laugh there. Or I fixed this bit this morning and it works, and now I'm really excited, and all that sort of thing.
Yeah.
All of which I never had with the previous show.
Yeah.
All I learned was, I wrote some nice links, and I would go, oh, I'm really pleased I found a way of linking these two old bits together in a fresh way.
Mm.
But I never had that feeling of, I've finally made this thing work.
Yeah.
So that's been nice.
That's really good.
So I was lying. I have got some jokes.
I was going to say,
I'm very concerned about continuity. So if I didn't, let's do a version of that for if you've edited out the bit where I said I didn't have any jokes. I have loads of jokes.
I have all the jokes.
Several, multiple jokes. We're talking double figures.
How did you find doing a work in progress in Edinburgh?
Shamefully enjoyable, because I felt really bad, because I had people who would
What venue was
I was in the lounge in the Counting House.
Okay, oh, that's
and
nice.
I did 14 days and it was full every night.
Oh.
I did an hour of flyering and basically I don't deserve to live. I don't deserve to walk this earth. What did I do to deserve such a nice run? Nothing. White privilege. I don't know what it was. So I was living with people and seeing people with properly finished written shows with narrative structures and a message and something to say and solid good jokes and a flyering team, and they were saying, oh, there's six people in today, and I was going, yeah mine was tough as well, even though it wasn't. I was having a lovely time even though I had basically no jokes. So I don't know. So I guess maybe that will never happen again and I'll never have such a nice experience, but part of the fun of it was that nobody was coming to see me. There were no important industry people, which is not unusual, but now it was my decision that no important industry people were coming to see me. No reviewers were coming to see me. I didn't have to be a show. It just had to be, just had to try and be funny. I didn't bring any of the tech. I brought a projector and stuff, and then just didn't use it and just said, oh, I'm just going to do 50 minutes of stand up and not bother with any of that now, because it's not a show yet. So I'll just not show, no point showing someone a half finished animation in a show.
I'll just wait
until it's finished.
Plus, then
you work on the quote-unquote jokes.
Yeah. Plus, in theory, then if you have a rough idea for the jokes, then you can fill in something that you want to put in, and it's like you can cut it down a little bit so there's more. The jokes are stronger.
Yeah. Yes. I love multimedia stuff, and I love it when anybody does anything in stand-up which is non-standard. Like whenever someone pulls a book out of their jacket, or unfolds a piece of paper, or gets out a guitar, or stands at a lectern, or does anything else.
Yeah.
Or sings, or does anything that isn't stand up, or does multimedia. I love all of that.
The few times I've done something like that, I've always had to put it near the end, because if I put it anywhere in the middle, I kind of find it difficult to go back to doing normal kind of.
That's interesting. How do you? So give me an example.
I did. So I a mixture of. So I used to sing the Serbian national anthem, but it was just my version of it, but I had to put it at the end because when
what's it called, by the way, just so we know,
the Serbian national anthem,
is that, it's not got a name.
Oh,
right,
no,
right.
That's what I just called it,
right.
I'm not Serbian enough to know it.
Presumably they have a Serbian name for it that's in
yes,
Serbian.
Exactly. But yeah, no, there was a couple of times where I put it near the middle, but it was kind of a bit of a gear change to kind of go back into. So I also think this about this.
But that might just be because that's a closing bit,
yeah,
rather than because it's different.
Yeah.
Although the fact that it's different might be.
Yeah.
It's sound. Yeah.
It used to work better towards the end, but.
No, you're right. I see. Yeah, and I now that you mentioned that, bits where I pull out a piece of paper or read off something, I've in shorter sets definitely have done those towards the end.
Mm.
But I mean, I have no experience of doing longer shows beyond one.
Mm.
But I do. I think things like that when I'm watching a show, I think
mm.
people use those to break up. So if you've got
absolutely.
If you've got a series of 10-minute routines or whatever structure a show is following, being able to say. I saw Andrew O'Neill do one of his Work in Progress shows, and he had a bit that I really liked where he said, a lot of comedians make a lot of money doing voiceovers, so I'm trying to get into that.
Mm.
And throughout the show would go over to a separate mic set up like a voiceover booth and do spoof adverts. So it was just back to the stand-up. And so he'd use a separate mic, and it's just punctuation. And each one of them... So. It's a different type of joke because there'd be one-liner type things or maybe wordplay rather than narrative things, and it's just really I really enjoyed the it's just a sort of a rhythmic thing.
An hour is long as well. I think every show
too long.
I think too long. I'm in the too long camp.
I've never seen an audience walk out of a show going, "Oh, I could have had 15 more minutes of that." ever.
An hour is too. It's too long. I've seen really great hours, and I always check my phone all the time. Sometimes some more than others.
I think it's interesting that people, when they're touring shows, often do 2 45-minute. I think that seems like a much more comfortable amount of comedy to. Because I don't know. Hitchcock said that the duration of a film should directly correlate with the capacity of the human bladder. I think, and his films are usually about it was full of good stuff like that. I don't know. If I'm probably paraphrasing, but his films are all about 90 minutes. He's a good film, an interesting director insofar as he's clearly an art film director. I would say, and very influential in art film circles, but also an incredibly successful commercial director who didn't consider any of his films to be successes if they were flops. Even though some of his flops are really good films, he would think that was a flop, won't do that again. Which isn't something you think of as being an arty thing, but has a lot of, I think, respect for the audience in that respect.
Yeah.
So it's around 90 minutes to 2 hours, never longer than that. And I think in a weird way, perhaps it's the death knell of cinema, the fact that you can go and see Michael Bay films, which are like 3 hours long, or X-Men films, and they're all 3 hours long. They feel like, are they this long? Because you need to convince us that we're getting our money's worth because it's so expensive to go to the cinema now.
Yeah.
Because they're all dreadful, and they're all incredibly long. I think if you're going to be a bad film, at least be short.
Yeah.
Why would you be bad and long?
Yeah.
Jade, we were saying that about music gigs as well. Even if it's a music gig that I'm really enjoying, I reckon if you packed in a really good hour, I'd be completely happy with my money's worth for that.
Yeah.
Anything over that, I'm kind of like, how many songs are you doing?
Yeah.
I watched Lord of the Rings, The Return of the King, which is a film that I think could finish probably 45 minutes before it does the other day. And because we watched The Two Towers, which I actually really like. The Two Towers, I think, is the best one.
I think that's the one where the Ents all come in and smash up Isengard. Now, I hate Lord of the Rings and J.R.R. Tolkien, and so don't allow my use of the phrase Ents, the words Ents and Isengard, to suggest that I have any interest whatsoever in Lord of the Rings. I know listeners can't tell, but I look like I'm obsessed with Lord of the Rings, but I'm not. I hate it. However, my girlfriend's family are fans, and her dad was a huge Tolkien fan, so I've seen all of the films and all of the extended editions and all of the featurettes. The featurettes are excellent, by the way.
He's really gone deep then. Did he force you to do that?
Well, no. The films are some of the most extraordinary films ever made in terms of trick cinema. So like Georges Méliès's early films where they were discovering that if you stop the camera and start the camera again, you can make people disappear and appear and you could do double exposures and things like... Disney's Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs, which, if you watch it, is an incredibly boring film. Incredibly tedious. But it's one of the most extraordinary visual feasts in cinema. And what they were doing was inventing loads of animation techniques that literally didn't exist before that film. You know, things like parallax on the camera, which are just incredibly meticulous things. Like, there was a minor earthquake while they were filming one scene, so they had to start the whole thing again. Like, a week's worth was lost because an earthquake wobbled the camera. It's like so much. And Lord of the Rings films are like that, but you know, character based story pieces, they completely fall down. But what they did with the miniatures and the visual effects are absolutely extraordinary. So as feats of cleverness, they're wonderful, but it's like watching a sort of a heartless magic trick where you sort of go, well, that was an incredible spectacle, well done, but I don't care at all about
it. I know it's lies.
But I do like the bit where the trees smash everything up. Yeah. that's a good bit.
I was going to say, I like the Two Towers. So
the Two Towers, I think, is the best is the best of the lot.
My opinion may not be as long, but it sure is forthright.
I apologise for my lengthy opinion. I mean, that is what you brought me here for. For my long and unnecessarily detailed opinions. I have one on everything, and it goes on. It really goes on for a while.
It's great, man. I love it. I find it really funny that you had to sort of start that by saying, I know I look like I'm in Lord of the Rings, but I really don't like
it. I didn't say I look like I'm in Lord of the Rings, but I do look like I'm in Lord of the Rings. Oh, Game of Thrones it is now, which I've never watched, and everyone's going,
no, I've never watched.
You look
that.
Like a White Walker. And I'm going, like, well, I'm white, and I don't know what a White Walker is, so I don't know. I probably do.
Does anyone here around this table, like, have you watched that?
Yeah, I've watched Game of Thrones, read all the books. Yeah,
Alice loves it as well. Alice, my girlfriend, loves it, but I've never got into it.
And he's one of the Is he a JRR or is he just a JR, or is he an RRJ?
He's
George
R.
George R. Sorry, is it a GRR? Yes.
GR.
So he's another good initials man.
That's what fantasy writers need.
Well, I suppose the women all did it so that nobody knew they were women, so the boys read their books, like J.K. Rowling, and probably others.
Is that true?
I think the publishers.
That's
still,
so
they
depressing,
no one's going to read.
It?
No boys are going to read a book by a Joanne. So we'll make it JK. I think it's as cynical as that, unfortunately.
Oh dear.
Also not a huge fan of Harry Potter, just to be clear. Nothing against it.
I didn't say anything, mate.
But I just want to be clear that
what
I'm not.
What do you like?
Gormenghast that's my fantasy. So keep your Lord of the Rings. Narnia and Gormenghast.
What's Gormenghast?
Right, how to describe it? I remember seeing on Antiques Roadshow, someone had one of Mervyn Peake's, the author's illustrations, and he said he wrote the Gormenghast trilogy, which is often compared to Lord of the Rings. I mean, what a terrible way of explaining something that is different to Lord of the Rings. I mean, if it were compared to Lord of the Rings, someone would go, oh, this series of three books is completely different to Lord of the Rings. All it has in common is that it's a series of three books that take place in an imaginary world. It has nothing
and
was written
to the future
by an English man. Yeah, that's it. It's got nothing in common with Lord of the Rings. So Gormenghast is a gothic trilogy, of which I've read two, because the third book is largely unreadable, although some people think it's the best, but I've never made it all the way through. And it's incredibly dense, brilliantly written prose. Well, I think it's brilliantly written, but if you think it's awfully written, I'm not going to argue with you. So there's entire chapters where all that happens is a piece of plaster flakes off a wall, and you'll be halfway through either of the books before you realise that you're enjoying them. So if you don't like them, and you do like them, the experience is the same until about halfway through. And if you're like me, halfway through you go, I'm suddenly finding this incredibly moving, and I'm completely involved in all of the characters, who are all sort of hideous grotesques, but there's real heart and compassion in there if you can dig your way through the sort of architecture and production design of it. But it tells its story through the building and the place, and you know it's a horrible, strange world of a massive castle where everybody's lives are regulated by impossible instructions that are written in books that are the origins of which have been forgotten, and one what's the word? Who wrote the Prince, the Italian philosopher?
I am striking out on this.
The evil Italian philosopher. His name is a byword for being sneaky and ruthless. anybody listening to this has remembered knows
anyone listening to this also knows mine and Joe's knowledge of Italian philosophers.
So, well, if you just think of a word that would mean cunning and ruthless.
Sneaky.
Sounds like an Italian surname.
Sneaky.
Oh, this is awful.
This is like how I imagine night school is. No, I just didn't listen for 6 years. I've got no idea.
I feel like we've broken the teacher.
Because I need to know. I can't move on without us.
Don't worry. I think we're trying. We're trying
get,
to
get onto the Ask Jeeves and find out. Oh, this is
ridiculous.
This is just like it's forgetting the word for postbox. It's a completely normal phrase that people use every day. Anyway, Steerpike is one of those types of character.
Okay.
Who works his way up through society, turning people against one another, and people go mad, and there are owls everywhere, and it's just
Sorry.
And the word is
Machiavelli.
I know that word.
Classic word. We're all familiar with.
Used it for that.
As soon as I saw it, I was like, "Oh, of course."
Machiavellian was the word. Sorry, I can't believe I haven't even read the book, but the book that he wrote, but not his. Anyway, so Gormenghast's good is what I was getting at.
Well, after is there a film?
There's a BBC. I think it's in production and it's likely to be bad. There's a BBC adaptation from the 90s which has the best cast you could possibly imagine and is terrible.
I hate it when that happens.
Yeah.
It's like that cast needs to just be attributed to a good film.
Well, you know, the way every drama the BBC does is done with a sort of a tenth of the budget that an American adaptation. Like they're doing His Dark Materials now, and you think, I hope you can do it well, because you really don't have the budget, and the film adaptation was terrible. But it's amazing what they do with BBC budgets, because they just have nothing compared to the American stations. But it looked cheap even by the standards of the early 2000s. You know, just terrible, horrible green screen. You know, if you watch it in a world in which Game of Thrones exists, it is laughable, and it was laughable at the time. But they had like Christopher Lee and Richard Griffiths, who were all perfectly cast for the characters they're playing. But it just looked, everything looked stagey, everything looked like it was on a set, everything outdoors was on a green screen. It looked awful. Just didn't work.
It's really frustrating when a good casting is kind of just let down by a...
Like The Hangover 2.
I think on that note, it is time for our beloved feature, Plots That About.
Wonderful. Plots that a plots, that a plots, that a plots, that a plots,
that a plots, that a plots that about. Plot That About. Is that
Plots That About.
Plots That About. Is that the name of the feature?
Yeah.
Extremely catchy. You only need to hear it two or three times and it's...
That's what we're trying to tell people.
Plots That About. What a ring. It's got to it.
Puns are not my speciality. So the feature is, I will give you and Joe a real film title each, but they are awful films, but they do exist. And you and Joe have to make up a plot to those films, embellish as much as you like, and tell us who's in the film. And Jade, at the end, will decide which of the two films she would most like to see. And I will then at the end also reveal what the actual films were about.
Oh, brilliant.
So Joe, as our resident, will go first.
I have a feeling that I will lose this one. This is the first time that I've gone, this is pretty much done and dusted. But go ahead.
Joe, yours is Parting Shots.
Oh, man. Okay, Parting Shots is the... So Parting Shots is a film that starts with the death of a man's wife, and that man is played by Dennis Hopper. Thanks. And he is an accountant, and then it's a sort of one of those films where he realises his wife dies and he realises that he can't, like, something that's happening to a lot of older men in this previous generation where they can't do anything for themselves. He can't cook for himself, he can't clean, he can't do anything. And then he has to make more money, so he invites he gets a lodger called Fargo.
Who plays Fargo?
Fargo is played by Fargo is played by Jason Lee.
Who is Jason Lee?
I will tell you. Oh, Jason Lee is the guy who was in. He's the lead singer of the. He was in. He's the lead singer of the band in Almost Famous.
All right.
Okay.
Everybody knows that.
Yeah.
Everybody knows that film. And he was also the main character in My Name Is Earl. I haven't got the right guy.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh yes, he's good.
Yeah, he's good. He's great.
I can see him as Fargo.
So yeah,
he's a Fargo type.
He's Fargo, and then so they move in together, and then. Basically, obviously, Fargo slowly realises that this old guy needs his help. You know, he doesn't know how to do anything, so they sort of... But he wants to teach him, because Fargo is blind. And but he keeps on realising that he's not doing anything. So Fargo teaches him, and at first they hate each other. And he has a friend that comes round, Dennis Hopper's friend.
I hope that's the character's name in the script.
Dennis Hopper's friend, who's played by... What's the name of the really old cowboy man?
Oh,
Eastwood?
Yes,
Clint Eastwood, sorry. Clint Eastwood, and he comes around and he goes, "Why are you hanging out with that guy all the time?" And, you know, and he's like, "Back off, Eastwood. He's trying to help me. Plus, he's blind." So
I can't believe you got. It's amazing that you managed to get Eastwood in just for a cameo. Such a small part.
Yeah, he's
quite choosy.
But he read the script.
Yeah, I guess that's it.
Magic's magic.
He just saw the character Dennis Hopper's friend.
So basically, they forge this friendship, and in the end, oh my god, it's horrible. So he starts going back through all of the things that he wanted to do for his wife used to criticize him for, like not being able to do anything and blah blah blah. And then they always said that when they were older, because she died old-ish, like, I don't know, late 50s?
Right.
He's late 50s.
Hmm.
And then they always said that they would move to Milan. And then, so he decides to sell his flat in Southampton and move to Milan. And then in the end, what's nice is that Fargo, on the last day, says, "Oh, thank you for helping me." And he says, "Well, you're coming to Milan too, aren't you?" And then Fargo sheds a single tear. That's the end. There you go. Parting shots.
Wow. I really want to see Dennis Hopper and Clint Eastwood starring in a film in Southampton. Alistair,
I'm extremely nervous now because that was very good.
Your film is Nature of the Beast.
So, the film Nature of the Beast, I'm an idiot. I was about to say what its name was in France, and then I remembered, I can't speak French. Why would I try and show off by translating something to a language I can't speak? Bête is beast. Nature de la bête. That's what it's called. I do speak French. Who knew? That's what it's called in France. And in German? No. Wow, playing for time doesn't help. It's not, when you don't speak any languages other than English, it's hard. So it's a romantic comedy starring what's her name? From Pretty Woman.
Julia Roberts
is the main character, and she plays a florist, and Jeff Goldblum plays a yeti.
This is amazing already.
Florist, nature, a yeti, beast. You see where it's going. So her floristry business is going down the tubes, or the pan. First the pan, and then subsequently the tubes. And so she's like, there's a hard-nosed business guy who's coming in and saying, "Julia Roberts, these people don't want flowers. I'm going to buy your flower shop and turn it into a corporate, less good version of the same type of business." And she's like, "You can't do that. The kids, need these flowers, and then there's like some like homeless kids or like street kids, and they're like, where are the cheap flowers? There's some free flowers because I'm a good guy, and they're like, get that, you can't keep giving away free flowers to poor children.
Is that Joe Pesci?
It's me. Yeah. I think I'm trying to do Coach Steve from Big Mouth. I don't know what I'm trying to do. Anyway, so Joe Pesci plays all of the children. It's a sort of Lord of the Rings type split screen situation. And they're like, thank you, thanks for the flowers. Anyway, so that's one of the scenes. So that's about 40 minutes of the film. So she's like, well, the only way I'm going to save this business is if I got some real flowers to show. So she goes out hiking in the like Yellowstone Park or somewhere like that, and she finds a Yeti, which I've just remembered live in the Himalayas, not in Yellowstone. I'm confusing them with Sasquatches or American Big Feet, as I believe the plural is. But it's a Yeti, and he's on holiday. But also, it's Jeff Goldblum. And the important thing to note here is that Jeff Goldblum is not acting at all. He's just playing the Yeti like Jeff Goldblum. So he's like, you're in the woods with me, a Yeti? And she's like, what a charming but physically awkward Yeti. Like, can't you just deliver a line without moving your body into a series of different places? And so he said, oh well, so he they sort of start to fall in love, but can a woman love a Yeti, even if it's Jeff Goldblum? Also, he can play the piano. And doesn't come into it yet, but you can sort of see from his fingers that he's got long fingers, hairy though. And so he introduces her to a magic flowers and plants and things, and so his sort of green fingers, figuratively not literally, help bring her flat florists to life. And then suddenly this is really busy and everything, but like the secret is that a Yeti is helping. So he has to like pretend not to be a Yeti, and it's sort of a fish out of water, like he's wearing a hat. And he has to pretend to be from like, what part of New Jersey are you from? He's like, I'm a Yeti. That's Jeff Goldblum trying to do a New Jersey accent, and he can't do it. And they all think he's French or something, and very broad humor. But eventually, the people find out that there's a Yeti, and then like the press descend, and he's like, I have to go back to the woods to be on my own. I'm voguing while talking, if that isn't clear. And she said, but if I leave, then the business is going to go down the pan and then subsequently the tubes. And he says, why would you say it like that? So specifically. And but really what he wants is for her to tell him that she loves him. And that's the you know, he doesn't want to stay for the business, you know, and the street kids, all of them look like Joe Pesci. At this point, we're wondering, like, is he their dad? And it's a thread that's never picked up in the film. But she finally tells him that she loves him, and then they stay, and then they rename the shop Nature of the Beast.
Oh wow. That's a good film.
And also sort of the plot to Little Shop of Horrors. I didn't realise until halfway through.
Wow, Jade.
Right, well, I'll start with parting shots. I liked the twist of how you kept it right till the end that they were in Southampton. It was a very good twist to the plot. I also like the fact that you had one character called Fargo, and the other two characters were called Dennis Hopper and Dennis Hopper's friend. There was no renaming of those. On the other side, was there a plot? I don't know. So maybe that was the downside to it. But
you could say that every time.
Well, you know, I keep giving you this feedback consistently. You still haven't brought me a plot. No, I thought it was very good, a very good cast. Nature of the Beast. I do love a rom-com. That's always good. I like Joe Pesci as well. So
you don't normally see him in a romantic comedy.
Exactly.
Role.
Yeah, it was quite a departure for
him. Come on, guys. Home Alone.
He's not a romantic comedy. About one child's love of being alone.
I feel bad for him because I feel like he would never play the main character of a rom-com, but
Netflix should do it if nobody else is brave enough.
Exactly.
The Joe Pesci rom-com, just call it that.
Yeah. I'd watch that. Yeah, that'd be great.
It would be like him as the man and the woman, kind of like a Jack and Jill Alexander thing, but a rom-com. But I like the fact that Jeff Goldblum was in it. I really like him a lot. Piano playing Yeti. I mean, what is there not to love in that?
Oh, yeah, and it ends with him playing the piano on the roof. And all the kids are sort of dancing and throwing flowers.
Like it. So
I'd like to call Out of Bounds, because he wasn't technically doing the game there.
Well, that's a post-credit sequence. So that's why I waited.
I need to remember that.
I was quite a fan of the fact that it was a bit like George of the Jungle or Splash, where they're like fish out of water kind of twist. And the fact that you brought it round to Nature of the Beast, that's always, you know, the twist of your one, unlike it being set in Southampton, it was the
So bringing it back round to the title is a plus in this instance.
Yeah, but you didn't bring it back round to the title.
But I did loads of times and I still lost.
Okay.
So that's why I've stopped doing it. Parting shots. Anyway.
So we'll after this, it was very, very close. I really liked Parting Shots a lot. I'm always just extra critical to you, Joe. It's harsh, and I know it, and I feel bad every time. But Nature of the Beast was my winner.
Thank you.
Congratulations, Alistair.
Thank you. A very sportsmanlike handshake from you there.
There's a handshake.
And I didn't feel like your heart was in it. I enjoyed it.
Oh, I'm a bad handshaker. Don't know that.
I feel like this feature is going to slowly break up our friendship.
Well, like, out of politeness, the guest has to win every time. And so you have to lose.
That's
the
true.
Format dictates that.
But one day I'll have too much gin in the pub and you'll be the only one left. And I'll go, let me show where that game we play.
Episode 7, Series 3. I should have won that.
There's some lime in my gin. Any comments about that? But yeah. Dark glimpse into what's
also,
actually going to happen.
Did the name
Merry
Fargo,
Christmas.
Joe, did the name Fargo, was that, were you just thinking of your new flatmate?
Yes. But his name is Iago, so I couldn't remember.
So it was Dennis Hopper, Dennis Hopper's friends, and the other character was one letter different to your new flatmate.
Yeah, the only person we've seen recently but who isn't in the podcast.
It's a hard game.
Right. Parting Shots was a black comedy and was Michael Winner's last film, which was described by one critic as Parting Shots is going to set the course of British filmmaking back 20 years.
Oh, wow.
And it didn't even live up to that. That's amazing.
It starred rock musician Chris Rea.
Oh, yeah.
And it's about a man who's told he has only 6 months to live. So he begins murdering everyone that has ever wronged him.
Oh, that sounds like
it's
good.
It's a black comedy. I thought it was a romantic comedy.
And Nature of the Beast. Funnily enough, not too dissimilar.
Is it the exact plot I just described?
Not too dissimilar. A romantic comedy.
Yeah.
About a couple who are called Julia and Rich. And Julia's cousin accidentally ends up taking some of Rich's medication, and that's when they find out that Rich is a werewolf. Julia finds
what
out.
What the fuck? This is nuts.
I feel like I could have guessed this exact plot.
Julia finds out that he.
Julia is the character's name.
Yeah,
this is pretty close.
They find out. Julia finds out he's a werewolf, but still loves him. The two end up getting married and live happily ever after as werewolf and wife.
Have you fucking watched this?
Who was in it? Anyone?
Autumn Reeser from the OC and Ugly Betty's Eric Mabius.
Right.
I've
not
seen
bound to be a winner.
I've not seen either of those two programmes. Congratulations, Alistair, on your win.
Thank you. I feel honoured. Thank you very much.
What's that about? Your prize is, we are now at the plug section. What would you like to plug with us?
I haven't really got anything to plug. You can sign up to Next Up and watch me do an hour, as well as loads of other better comedians. But you don't have to choose; you can watch all of them. you can buy video games, Nelly Kootle Up the Foul Fleet, or Unforeseen Incidents, which I did writing on. And
awesome.
So, if you buy them, I will get a very small or an extremely small amount of money, and be excessively grateful for that. Vote Labour. Is that
yeah? What's your Twitter handle?
It's at Mr. ABK. But because MR had been taken, it's MISTERABK, because all the other ABKs got in first. All the other variations of ABK.
Fuckers.
But thanks to the new change where they've added the characters to your field name, I'm finally able to fit Alistair Beckett King into my name. Because you know when they added 270 characters, they also extended the name field. Because
awesome.
Up until that point, my name was too long to fit in the name field. And now it fits. I was Alistair Beckett King. All smashed in there, like an accident. And now it's got room to breathe. It's got the it's got its hyphen back. It's got spaces.
Picturing your name, but in like a vice.
Yeah, exactly. Imagine that. Please follow me on Twitter, because almost no one does, and I'm very amusing, I think.
You are very
comparatively
amusing.
I'm decent. I deserve a couple of retweets now. So, come on, guys, give Al. It was Al all the time. Why don't you remember? And then I go into singing. Buddy, Can You Spare a Dime? And that's the end of the podcast.
Mr. Joe Foster, do you have anything to plug?
Yes. I do. I have. I'm doing a Brighton Fringe show next year with Phil Gerrard, and I have the dates through. And the ones that I can remember are the 1st and 2nd of June at 3 p.m. at the Caxton, and also the Friday near that, which is the 30th. There's one earlier than that, but I'll remember that for next time. I'm also at Top Secret Comedy Club on Valentine's Day 2019, and the day before / after Valentine's Day.
Valentine's Day. And
so,
what comes after Valentine's Day?
The post boxing Valentine's Day. Valentine's Box Day. So that's a weird booking thing, isn't it? So yeah, come to that. And besides that, I'm going on holiday, so I'd like to plug that.
That's it.
So that's me.
Jade?
Nothing this week. Just as always, listen, as well as this podcast, to my other podcast, which is Musical Chairs, which is about a musical, film musicals. So listen to that with me and comedian Jen Ives. And yeah, nothing else really. Just looking forward to Christmas. So plugging Christmas.
You would never hear anything about it.
Who needs it this year?
Is there a Facebook event?
Otherwise I'm not going.
How many attending or are interested? I am doing Hot Water Comedy in January. As of yet I don't have a date, but it is in January, and I will share that.
That's narrowed it down to about 30.
Yeah. I've narrowed it down to the 12th of the year.
You could do a post plug because you did the comedy store, didn't you?
Oh, yeah. I did. I just came back from the...
I mean, that's a boast, is what a post plug is.
It's a brag. I tell you what, he never says anything good that he ever does.
Go on, say it.
Go on, just tell everyone what you've done.
I played the Manchester Comedy Store and it was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed it. What a lovely experience.
Well done. Alex.
Thank
you. Do you have any post plugs?
once won a game of Jenga. Absolutely no bother. Just straight out the gate. First time I played it, I'm a natural.
I kind of took over hosting this, didn't I?
You sure did.
Sorry for that. That's everything from me. I'm Alex Petrovic. That's Joe Foster.
Yes.
Jay Gebby.
Bye.
And our fantastic guest this month, Alistair Beckett King.
Thank you for having me.
Bye.